Well, hello. Welcome to The Awesome with Cody. I'm Cody. This week's episode, we are going to continue along with our January theme of Guillermo del Toro movies. So this week, I'm going to combine two, because they have to do with each other. They're Hellboy and Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. So basically, if you haven't been keeping up with this month, all Guillermo del Toro's movies have a certain aesthetic to them, and neither of these two falter from that at all. They're very, very heavy on visuals, as they should be. There's no reason they should not be whatsoever. But I guess the biggest thing, starting with Hellboy 1, The biggest thing about that one is it seemed like something that wasn't gonna be made ever, like Hellboy in general, just because the concept is crazy to think about, and the fact that, you know, the source material is very bizarre. So the first movie and the second movie were written by Guillermo del Toro. The first Hellboy 1 was written by him. He wrote the story with Peter Briggs. Peter Briggs isn't that big of a name that you're really going to know too much about. He's done a lot of things. It doesn't matter. He wrote the first movie with Guillermo del Toro. Both the Hellboy character itself, if you don't know who it is, it's a comic book created by Mike Mignola. I can't say his name. It's terrible. I'm terrible with names. And he's designed this world where the supernatural exists in the real world, and there's this the earthly world is kind of like on top of it, and, you know, humans have taken over and become the dominant race on the planet, or species on the planet, I should say, not race. Race is something we determined later on in life. There's a lot to it. I haven't read like a whole lot of Hellboy stuff. I got into it late. And it's just one of those things. It's not like I didn't like it. It's just I just didn't go far enough into it, really. But the first one, they're both based on Mike Mignola's work, and I believe he liked everything he saw in the first one, and that's why he actually agreed to do the second one, and they were going to do a third one and a spinoff from that one. Both Ron Perlman and Guillermo del Toro were really geared up to do a third movie too, and I'll get more into that a little bit later. It just logistically and financially just didn't come about. Hellboy 2 was, I mean, I think it was, I mean, it took 4 years to make it, but it's one of those things where the first movie didn't do like gangbusters. I mean, it didn't double its money, which is one of the reasons that it took so long to make a sequel. And it was more of the fact that I think having Mike Mignola come on and help write the story for the second one actually helped get it made, because the studio, I guess, felt that he might as well have the creator in there. He's going to, you know, maybe with his insight, it's going to be that much better. But the thing you got to remember about Hellboy is that it's fantasy stuff, and that doesn't always really hold well with the mainstream crowd. The other thing, too, is the folklore, I guess you could say, behind both movies is pretty steeped in the fantasy realm, especially the second one. Holy smokes, the second one. You got elves and goblins and trolls. Troll Markets, oddly enough, another Guillermo del Toro project. I will not be talking about this month because it's not technically a movie. It is an amazing TV program on the Netflix called Troll Hunter. I feel very, very strongly in saying that I have a feeling they're tied to the same universe, and he's never come out and said it, but I would say it is, because the entrance to the Troll Market is underneath a bridge. You know, like, it's a different Troll Market. It's not the same Troll Market, but it is a Troll Market, and it is under a bridge, and it's full of trolls, and they're very similar to what you see in this movie, but or in the second movie, in Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. The first movie is more of Hellboy. It's all about Hellboy's coming into this world, and ultimately his being is the son of the Fallen One, who is very much not the devil, but a you know, can be seen as a devil, very demonic being. So he has a lot going for him. The first movie is very Guillermo del Toro in the way that it's very high tech. There's a lot of high techy stuff going on in it. There's one of the bad guys is this clockwork creature. I don't want to call him. I don't know really what to call him. He has, man, how do I put this in a way that doesn't make me sound, if you haven't seen it, he's this ever-living creature who is basically altered his body to be mechanical, and like he has this wind-up thing to him. It's very, very, very weird and very strange, but it's very, you know, very Guillermo del Toro. Because he loves that shit, and he's very Nazi-ish, because that's have to do with Nazis. He has this aesthetic to him. When you first see him, he's got this more humanoid-looking face, but still a mask with these goggled eyes and these weapons. And then the second time you see him, he's very sleek. He's got essentially a flat black reflective face. And later on, you see him his body outside the armor, and it's just withered away corpse type thing. It's pretty cool. But the first movie is very centered around Hellboy and his existence with the BPRD, which is the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Development, or Defense. Development would be weird. Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. Which is another big, like another, Mike Mangola continued on and made that, so it had a lot more in depth with that too. But Hellboy scratched like the proverbial tip of the iceberg on that one. These movies did. There's a lot more to it. And you kind of see in the second one, they actually go more further into it, and there's like this big old hangar bay, and the facility's a lot bigger or more explored. And they have more than just people in the United States. In the second one, Seth MacFarlane plays a character who is it's very funny. They do it's done in a very clever way. He speaks with a German accent. He says a lot of things with the playing up the German accent quite a bit. But he is a smoke creature. You don't fully get into his complete backstory. I'm trying to think of a different way of putting it, but you learn a little bit about it, but not like a whole lot. So it's interesting to see, them kind of open up the broader idea of things, and you really would, you imagine that there's a whole lot more to go on. And there is, at one point in the second movie, they're getting ready to basically sneak off and steal a plane and fly to where the bad guy's at. And he was, right before that, mentioned how he's not human, or if he's human anymore, he'd understand, blah, blah, blah. And then he's clutching this little velvet bag, and then he goes and confronts them and says, you know, it kind of alludes to his backstory about how he had a wife, and when he lost her, he also lost his body in some kind of experiment that he did. So he, not only is he human still, and he has emotions, but he's calculated because he's afraid of what he did to himself and his wife could happen to somebody else, and he doesn't want that to happen. So, you know, that sort of thing. So you get that kind of a little backstory in him. So give me a more character-centric everything, which is pretty cool. Yeah, so in the first movie, like I said, it's very, very centered around Hellboy himself and goes more into his... the ending has to do more with him being the fallen king's son, or Fallen One's son, and how he's royalty, and you get to see him in his almost full form when he puts his stone hand inside the pillar, and it basically ignites, and you see his horns regrow, and he has the fiery crown, and he's fully powered up, which is pretty cool. I like the bad guy, I like the henchman thing, Samuel, in the first movie. It's a very clever creature. He is Samuel the Unborn, not Unborn, the Resurrection something or other. It's based on a god, or an angel in many different religions, really. But he's referred to as he resurrects, and when he falls in this movie, so when you kill Samuel, he actually, when his body decays, two more erupt, and they go and the souls, it doubles and goes in the egg and creates two more of them. And so essentially, as you cut one down, two more arise, and it's just gonna be very bad for everybody. Brian Steele actually does the mocap and the creature motion stuff for both Samuel in the first movie and Wink in the second movie. He plays a lot more. So I should say he's done a lot of things. For Guillermo del Toro, he was in Hellboy 1. He played Samuel. He was in Blade Trinity. He was Drake, the Drake creature. I should have talked about that. It's not really a Guillermo del Toro movie, but he was in the Blade movies. The third one, not the second one. That's why I didn't really talk about him last time. But then he comes back, and this one he plays five different characters. Wink, who's one of the henchmen of the Prince in Hellboy 2, the Golden Army. He plays a bunch of trolls and other ones inside the troll market, which is pretty cool. So yeah, it's him. And he's always a two-time collaborator with Guillermo del Toro. And then another repeat. So Ron Perlman is Hellboy. He comes back. He was in Blade 2. He was in Hellboy 2. You have... we talked about before with Guillermo del Toro movies, Pan's Labyrinth was the most one. You have Doug Jones, who plays three characters. Hold on, I'll pull it up right now. I think it's three characters in the movie. He plays Abe Sapien again. This time he actually, in the first movie, he did the mocap, but the suit work, so in the prosthetics. And David Hyde-Pierce did the voiceover. He dubbed his voice. In the second movie, David Hyde-Pierce didn't come back. I mean, mostly probably because, well, the first movie didn't do great, but Doug Jones actually gets to use his real voice. He does the lines of Abe Sapien in the second movie, which is pretty cool. He also, Guillermo del Toro directed it or anything, but in the world of Hellboy, they did a couple animated direct-to-video movies, and he actually voiced Abe Sapien in that one as well. Ron Perlman was back. Selma Blair was back for the animated movie as well, too, which are pretty cool, but they weren't directed by Guillermo del Toro, so we won't talk about those. I think it was just one, actually. Sword of Storms, I think, was the one they did. It doesn't matter. Back to the Guillermo del Toro movies. So Doug Jones plays Abe Sapien in not just body, but he actually voices him as well in the second movie. He also plays the Angel of Death, which is one of my favorite visual characters that Guillermo del Toro has ever done. I think I mentioned it during the Pan's Labyrinth episode. It's in that movie he plays a couple different characters, the Fawn and the Child Eater. This one he plays three, so he has Abe Sapien, he has Angel of Death, and he has the Chamberlain. The Chamberlain is very short. Actually, both Angel of Death and Chamberlain are very short roles in this. Abe is obviously very center stage in this one, much more so than in the first movie. The reason I like Angel of Death is visually he's stunning character. You see him, he's shrouded. He has wings. When they open up, you'll see at the crook where the knuckle of the wings are at. So like the wings come up. There's two sets, essentially a bottom set and a top set. And he has no eyes on the front of his face. He has a mouth and nose, and it has this flat crown piece that comes up over where his eyes are at. And when the wings unfurl, there's these blinking eyes. Like I said, the knuckle or the crux of the independent joint of the wings where the feathers come out to fan out. The little crux there, the knuckle, you could say, has eye sockets with eyes that blink and look around in it. It's just visually stunning. And of course, Doug Jones, being a very tall gentleman, his stature helps a lot with this, and his overall ability to manipulate his body in certain ways and articulate his fingers and his legs. And he's just very lanky and tall, so it makes it very good. It makes this very ominous. He's very big and he moves very fluidly, pretty interesting way. But by far one of my favorite creatures. Pan's Labyrinth has the better ones too. I mean, it's the Fawn and the Skin Eater, the Skin Guy, whatever he is, the Child Eater. And of course, in this one, the Chancellor is a very small role. He's just in one scene where the prince comes in. He wants to go to the throne room where his father's at to confront him about the war. And you see him there. He's mostly just standing still, but you can really tell it's him by his fingers and his odd way of manipulating them back and forth. And I think it is the voice for all three of those characters, if I'm not mistaken, in that movie as well. So he does the physical acting as well as the voice acting. David Hyde Pierce, by the way, if you don't know who that is, that's Niles Crane from Frasier, the show, spinoff show from Cheers with Frasier Crane, plays his brother. He's been in other things too, but that's definitely his most popular thing you know him from, other than the voices of Abe Sapien. Doug Jones had to, in the second movie, when he took over the voice for Abe Sapien from David Hyde Pierce, he speaks a little differently than David. David has this very, very poignant, aristocratic way of speaking, very elegantly. Doug does too. It's just they don't sound exactly the same. I think Doug's is a little deeper than David Hyde Pierce's voice, but you know, it's fine. Whatever. He didn't want to come back for the sequel, even though the sequel actually did better. And I think overall, people actually like the second one more because of the grandness that it is. I could be wrong about that. I don't know, actually. I don't think I've ever really talked to him. I know Eric, who you've heard on the other podcast a few times, and maybe you'll probably hear him next week on the main podcast, if he actually ends up showing up. But I believe he doesn't. He likes the second one more than the first one. There's more of a story to the second one too. It's more fantasy though, so you know, maybe not as popular as the first one. First one's very narrow in scope and doesn't have a whole lot of action in it. The second one has a whole lot more action in it. You have a bunch of fights. Oh, and the Tooth Fairies in the second one too. Crazy little creatures in that one. When Wink and the prince, they go to steal the first part of the crown. They go to this auction and they get ready to release these creatures, which you don't know right away what they are. Later on, you find out they're nicknamed Tooth Fairy. Because they eat teeth, especially like teeth, but they eat calcium, so bones and stuff. But they eat everything. All they do is eat and shit, as one of the characters says in it. I don't know what Liz says in it. I don't know why I said one of the characters. One of the main characters, Liz, who's played by Selma Blair. They have these multiple legged bodies, very slender, have little wings. They buzz around. Their jaws move real fast, and they just burrow through bone. They're pretty crazy little creatures. They swarm them and stuff, and then it's a pretty fun little way to do it. Other big names in this, in both movies, but more so only the first one, is John Hurt, who plays Trevor Bruttenhelm, who's the essentially the father figure to Hellboy, who basically raises him. He ends up getting killed in the first movie. Sorry if I spoiled him for you. And then he's in a flashback scene in the first part of Hellboy 2 when Hellboy is a kid, and he tells him the story, and that actually leads to the overall story. And they do a pretty cool cinematic CG'd with these wooden figures to show the battle and stuff, and then the formation of the Golden Army and where they are now, and where they are and why they are where they are now. That's a terrible way of saying that. So it's pretty cool. I know some people kind of complained about that, I think, if I remember correctly, but I thought it was a really neat way of doing it. And obviously, you couldn't do that scale of 200,000s of soldiers battling each other with orcs and elves and all that fun stuff. So doing it with what looks to be figures, because they stylishly done it, but they also did it through, the reason they look like that is because when John Hurt's character is reading the story to Hellboy is staring into the fire and he's imagining it. So the story, what you're seeing is the story playing out in Hellboy's mind, which is he's at that point holding a Howdy Doody puppet doll. And so in his mind, that's what he sees. I'm guessing is the reason why they do it that way. But it's very, very cool looking cinematic that they do to tell you the story of the Elven King and the Golden Army and how it came about and why it's where it's at, which is pretty cool. Another multi-movie collaborator would be Luke Goss. I talked about this before during my discussion about Blade 2. Blade 2, he played Novak, and this movie plays Prince Nada. Is his first name. His last name is Silver Lance. But it's King Balor's son and the twin brother of the princess. And he's the main antagonist who basically is never, he doesn't really oppose Hellboy at all in the movie. He actually lets him go several times until he gets in his way, and then he, you know, tries to kill him twice, actually. But he's very martial arts, he's very sword driven, he does an excellent job. And it's so far, and actually both these movies, they do an excellent job with the CG. The only part that looks really goofy is actually the kid that they throw in the makeup to look like Hellboy when he's younger. His face doesn't move as well because the makeup is caked on and he has these big fake teeth. Yeah, that's really it. But I mean, that's, I mean, otherwise, it's really good. A lot of practical effects. I think the biggest, there's a lot of CG at the end with the Golden Army. The entrance into where the Golden Army's at the end of the movie. That's a big CG entrance. Otherwise, very practical effects. Obviously, a lot of makeup. Doug Jones, full body makeup, majority of the time. A lot more full body shots of Hellboy in this movie too. Him without his shirt, just hanging around his room inside the BPRD, the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. So you get to see the markings in Hellboy's body, the swirls and stuff that later don't ever come to effect in this one, but when he does transform, they light up and you can see fire burning in him, like his fist does when he gets all angry and powered up. Lots of kitties. Liz is pregnant in the second one. She's having twins, which is odd because they got done killing twins and he finds out. Let's see what else is awesome about it. In both movies, just like most Guillermo del Toro movies, I can't talk. It's not just about, the action stuff. There's a story behind it. And the fact that in the first movie, it was the coming to grips with, the way you have to live with yourself and, you know, things like that. And your past and your future and how to your future isn't dictated by who you are but what you do. The second movie is more broad in how people look down on people who are different than them and are afraid of them in a ways and how to overcome that and everything, and do what's right for everybody and how we can live in a harmony, that sort of thing. There's a lot more to it, but that's basically what it is on that. All of his movies have it. I think I talked a little bit on Pan's Labyrinth. All the movies he writes. Blade 2 didn't really have anything moral in it other than just, you know, if you're a vampire, Blade gonna get you. But Pan's Labyrinth has some stuff. These two movies have some moral stuff in it. You have Pacific Rim has it in it, which I'll be talking about next week. What else? And then the last movie, Shape of Water, which I finally saw, that has some moral stuff in it too. And we'll talk about that as well. Hellboy 1 and 2, pretty awesome. Oh, I'll go over the canceled sequels and the spinoff stuff. So right after, the first movie, I'm not gonna say bomb, but didn't do as good. They were planning to do more. Guillermo got tied up to do some other stuff. He expressed interest in doing a sequel, basically saying, I think we would all come back to do a third Hellboy if they can wait for me to get out of Middle Earth, but we don't know. Ron may want to do it sooner, but I certainly know where we're all going to the movie on the third one. That was in 2010, which is 2 years after the second movie. 2 years after that, Ron Perlman was quoted saying, "I can say publicly now that we are together in trying to do Hellboy 3, which is very promising." And then it just fell apart from there. Just a lot of hemming and hawing and Mike Mignola trying to get it, get it going too with them. They tried a lot of different things. They tried to make a comic book, but Mike Mignola said no, to it. So, you know, there's a lot of that going around. It's bouncing around all the time, but, eventually, in, I think it was 2007, early 2007, Guillermo del Toro came out on Twitter and said that there was a report that 100% that Hellboy 3 will not happen. And the reason why, because shortly after that, we found out that they're going to reboot it next year with David Harbour. If you don't know who he is, he's the sheriff, plays Hopper in the very popular Stranger Things. He'll be doing the role of Hellboy, and I will post, if I remember tomorrow, I'll post a picture of it, of him in the test costume with the hand and then the red, and the horn stumps and everything like that. And then Neil Marshall is involved. I think he's directing it. But they're rebooting it. Mike Mignola is part of it. I think he's writing the actual movie. But it's called Hellboy Rise of the Blood Queen, so it'd be pretty cool. It's going to be rated R, which is pretty dope. But yeah, so that's the reboot of it. The spinoff was going to be the screenwriter from the first movie, Peter Briggs, was asked to do a spinoff on The Prince, but it I don't think it was going to ever happen. I mean, it would have been cool, but it just went away from it because they were using the name and it didn't work out as well, but whatever. But you know, cool, whatever that was. I think that's it for this week's episode. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. I will say this. I think you should watch it. Oh, the music was in the second was done by Danny Elfman, so that's a fun little thing too. Because you know Danny Elfman's awesome in his own right. But yeah, that's it for this week's episode for the awesome Cody. I'm Cody. We were talking about Hellboy 1 and Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. And we'll continue next week with some more Guillermo del Toro movies, which I already think I said is going to be Pacific Rim. And we'll talk about the sequel, which he's not attached to, but, you know, get along with that too. But that's it for this week, everybody. So I will talk at you next week about some more stuff. As usual, stay awesome.